Hi, and welcome to episode 71 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher Tier. And to my digital somewhere is David, also known as Red Conversation. Say hi, David.
Hello, I am in Oregon.
I know, I'm just terrible with directions. I just know you're somewhere that's not near me.
It's north and to the west.
Thank you. See, this is why we need you on the show more often, because I'm terrible with directions. And that dulcet voice that you hear is the one and only Dave Fenoy, if you would like to say hello.
Well, hello, everybody. How you doing?
Good. I'm super excited, and I promise I will try not to fangirl too hard at you, because I got a chance to see you at Gamer X, so.
Yeah, and you were very cool. You weren't fangirling out. You were just being you.
Oh, I know. It's just I have that little moment of squee, and then I get over it.
Yeah, you're suppressing it.
Yeah, I'll behave. Well, I mean, you know, we're professionals. We can do this. We do
absolutely. Absolutely.
I think her secret is that her being her has just like a base level of fangirl at all times.
You know what? I could see that. I could see that.
I'm a big nerd. Exposed me, David. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, you know, and GamerX was a blast. I had so much fun. I met so many really cool people. And one of my favorite parts, not the most important part per se, but was Sunday when all the 49er and Cowboy fans showed up, and it was Worlds Collide. But it was cool. Nobody was upset. Nobody, you know, nothing broke out. Everybody was, hey, what's up? How you doing? So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, for the most part, it was cool. It just seemed like after the game let out, there was a little bit of friction from some folks.
Well, I think that friction would have been there anyway. Not because one group was football player or football fans and the other group was the LGBT community, but because there was only so much room in the restaurants and bar. And, you know, saying, oh, gee, who are all these, what are these football people doing here? Who are all these, whatever they are, people doing here? You know, there's, yeah, a little bit of that. But, you know, I saw a lot of people, like, you know, high-fiving each other and whatnot from different groups and saying hello and that kind of thing. So I thought it was cool. Of course, it was now San Francisco. So, you know, San Francisco's pretty liberal and progressive town.
Very true. So let's get our usual spiel out of the way, then we can jump into questions.
All right.
So for those listening, we have teas and other items that I need diverse game spreadsheet shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobings, and we have a blog to compliment the show. So follow us over at outoftokenscast.com. If you have compliments, questions, episode, or guest feedback, feel free to drop us a note there as well. You can also add us on Twitter at outoftokenscast or email at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. Musical accompaniment for Fresh Out Tokens is provided by Mike Moody. You can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. And with that long-winded intro out of the way, I'm sure there are people listening who may not know who you are and what you do, Dave. So can you give a bit of an intro?
Okay, my name is Dave Fenoy, and I'm a voice actor. I have been a voice actor in Los Angeles for about 26 years. I have done a lot of TV promos, a lot of commercials, a lot of narration. And what people mostly know me for, though, are video games. I've been on more than 200 video games, and probably most notably playing the character Lee Everett from The Walking Dead game.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, where people will immediately recognize you, but you've done so many games.
Yeah, it's over 200, and because the industry is growing and more games are coming out all the time, The number of games I do per month now is way up. It used to be, you know, you do two or three games in a 6 months, and and then slowly as the industry got bigger and more games were being made, now, and you know, now you're doing one a month, now you're doing one a week, and now I'm doing a couple a week. So this industry is growing by leaps and bounds, and I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Well, we're glad you're here, because you brought so many characters to life for us.
Ah, well, thank you. And I just to name some for you, other than Lee Everett, I'm Vol'jin in the Worlds of Warcraft, Gabriel Tosh, World of StarCraft. I play Lucius Fox on Batman Arkham Knights. I'm Bluebeard on The Wolf Among Us, and a bunch of other characters along the way.
Yes.
I am ceaselessly impressed with voice actors and how they, like, you were in The Secret World, which I did not know, but yeah, I've like interacted with the character you played.
Ah, and one of the things that happens when you're that many games over that many years, The Secret World, which game was that? I sometimes forget. I forget games that I'm in, and you know, it reminds me of when I was a disc jockey. And somebody I'd run into, you know, and they'd say, oh, man, I remember when you said blah, 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 blah a few months ago. And, like, I didn't remember saying it. It was just, you know, off the top of my head, there it was, and boom. So the same thing happens, you know, since I've been doing this for 26 years and started doing, I think I did my first game in, like, 91, 92. It's been a while. It's been a while. You kind of... Yeah, you do the work, go home, and wait for the next gig.
So you're not really a gamer, but we wanted to ask, how do you usually prep for gaming voiceover roles?
Well, you know, you win the job in the audition, and you develop that character in the audition. That's what gets you booked or call back, at least. On the job, it's instant acting. You will not have seen that script until you are on the job, and then it's here's the line, here's the next line, here's the next line. The nature of voice acting up until very recently has been you're always working by yourself. In the last year, I've done a couple of games that we had ensemble reads, in which case, you know, you're doing it linearly. So, you know, this line, the next person's line, and then so forth and so on, like you do in cartoons. But most of the time you're working by yourself in video games. So it's, you have to get into character and whatever those words are on the page in front of you, know what your motivation is, know what the action is, know what your relationship is with the person you're talking to, and then let it out. And it's getting more sophisticated. It used to be most of the games, once you developed the character's voice and general attitude, your lines could be said to anyone. So you had some greeting lines. You had some attack lines. You had some taunting lines. I need some help lines. I'm dying lines. Oh, I'm being resurrected lines. Those kinds of things. But they could have been said to anybody. So once you were in character, that... in many ways was a lot easier than where the industry is going now, which is like a Lee Everett character where you're talking to a lot of different people and your relationship with them is different, each and every one. Just like in real life, how you speak to people is based on your relationship with them. How you talk to your mom is different than how you talk to your boss, is different than how you talk to the person you love, and so forth and so on.
Definitely, because... you know, it's so weird when you think about this is one person and you look at all the things you've done. You know, a lot of people would be like, well, I could pick your voice out in some things, but not others. It's like, oh, that was Dave Fennoy. And it's like they don't click with the voices you're doing because of the variance in the character.
Because sometimes you're doing something very different and they not know.
I also assume it makes a difference when the voice actor is visible. Like, I'm always going to recognize your voice now that I have seen and spoken with you.
Ah, there you go. Well, you know, I think I have a pretty recognizable voice, and that becomes part of, you know, really who you are and bringing whatever character, whatever feeling, the good guy, the bad guy, the scared guy, the brave guy, whatever it is, still has to, you know, filter through who you are.
Definitely. But since we're talking about all the different ways in which you do voices and things like that and how the industry has changed, unfortunately, we've been hearing about a move to strike for voice actors in the video game sector. So
yeah,
I was wondering, what did you think about it? And hopefully, do you think it'll bring better change for you all?
Well, hopefully we won't have to strike. What the strike is all about, as in usual working conditions, you want better working conditions and better remuneration. Now, the video game industry is the most profitable entertainment industry in the world. It dwarfs movies and music combined. There's never been a movie that made $1 billion in a day. We've had several games that have. And yet, despite that, despite the fact that you get residuals for commercials, you get residuals for cartoons, residuals for TV shows, residuals for movies, as of yet, the producers of video games do not share in profits, and they have been slow to help us protect our voices. When you're working on games and, you know, you're screaming and hollering and, you know, you're in the fight scenes and jumping and warning people, if you're shouting too long, it can damage your voice. And if you damage your voice often enough, long enough, you damage it permanently. I dare say I live in a constant state of slightly raw voice. And we're looking for two things, mostly better working conditions, which means shorter sessions where there's lots of shouting, and two, a piece of the action. Every other entertainment sector has residuals, so the sector that makes the most money should have residuals as well. And it's actually an easy equation, much easier than TV shows and movies, because it's based on sales. It's very quantifiable. Mm-hmm. And we're not asking for anything ridiculous. Not every game makes a lot of money. Well, if the game doesn't make more than X amount of dollars, well, you don't get a residual because it didn't meet the criteria. But if you've got a game that made $1 billion in a day and, you know, does, again, two times that over the course of a year or two, you should see some of that profit. I mean, you're a big part of that. So that's our position.
Oh, definitely, because, I mean, there's so many games that the voices make it iconic.
They do, and what we hear in negotiation with the producers, and this is kind of normal. I've sat in on negotiations management in some other areas. The first thing they do is insult you. The first thing they say is, well, we don't really need you. Anybody can do what you're doing, which, of course, isn't true. Then they have said things to us like, well, we want to fine you $2,500 if you're late, and we want to fine you $2,500 if you are inattentive, which means looking at your phone. And it's really not for guys like me and most of the other what I would call journeyman voice actors. Just like movies and cartoons or, you know, animated features are trying to get movie stars, you know, celebrities, big names. Video games are doing the same thing with mixed results. Unfortunately, despite the fact that I'm not a player, I have nothing but respect for the industry. I recognize the importance of video games and what a revolution this is in entertainment. Never before have people been able to be a part of the storytelling, you know, as the consumer of the entertainment. You know, you sat, you watched, you clapped or said, this sucks. But now, as a gamer, you get to decide how the game goes to a certain point. That's revolutionary. So I'm happy to be a part of this business. I love doing the gaming work. I love playing these characters. But a lot of the celebrities don't. So they're not getting paid nearly as much as they would have gotten paid on a movie or for something else. So sometimes they've been booked, they've agreed. Something else comes up, and either they show up late, or they don't show up, or they're booked for a four-hour session. After an hour, they say, oh, I'm tired, I gotta leave. And that costs the developer a lot of money, because they gotta book the studio again, and, you know, get all the ducks in a row to get that done. And sometimes they just don't give a good performance. There's been a lot of talk, talked with a number of directors who've been very disappointed in the performances they've gotten out of celebrities, because it's kind of a specialized talent, specialized style of acting. And also, not everybody can take the words off the page. In many ways, if you have a costume on, are told where to stand, memorize your lines, you know, and you do it over and over and over, after a little while, of course, you're in character. Well, to do this for video games It's now. There's no memorization. You're not in a costume. More often than not, you're in a studio by yourself. So it takes another level of acting ability. I'm not going to say more, but a different kind of acting ability to make it happen. And not all on-camera actors, celebrities, know how to do it or are willing to take the time to learn.
Yeah, you can definitely tell when it's not a professional VA. I mean, at least for me, because that's one of the things I pay attention to. I don't know about other people, but it's like, ooh, you're a celebrity. This isn't what you normally do, and you could tell they kind of phoned it in.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping we don't have to strike. So far, the developers have not been willing to negotiate fairly. All they've wanted to do is pay us less, insult us, and fine us based on their experiences with the celebs.
Well, good luck. I hope it does not come to a strike.
No, yeah, well, no. Let's see. What's today? Wednesday? Friday's the day. We'll see. We'll see.
So hopefully by the time this airs, there will not be a strike.
Yeah, well.
Or a successful strike.
True.
Yeah. Short and successful.
Yeah.
It's not. It wouldn't be good for anybody. It wouldn't be good for anybody.
So the next subject we were going to move on to is you've talked about black characters not being voiced by black voice actors. And do you think that'll change in the near future?
Well, I hope so. In a perfect world, it wouldn't matter, but of course we don't live in a perfect world. And one thing we feel that we have to deal with is art, and the other is the realities of employment. And, we need more black actors, more males, more females doing those parts. And Hollywood has a bad reputation for putting white actors in parts that should be played by some ethnic group. When we looked at, The Last Samurai, that's a white guy? Come on. There's the Bruce Lee story. They're going to star a white guy. And the excuse there is always that, well, you know, the audiences aren't going to, you know who these actors are. And, well, the world is changing rapidly. And we have huge international stars in movies and television that are crossing over, and we are seeing it in some Hollywood movies and TV shows where they are using ethnic people. And I mean, you know, come on, Denzel. So there's star power in every ethnic group, and we are a multicultural society. So it's time for Hollywood to get over it, and the gaming industry has to get over it. Now, I don't have stats on how many black characters are being played by non-black people or Asian characters being played by non-Asian people and so forth, but I definitely would want to encourage casting people for video games to find the black actor that can play the part if it's a black role. That said, there are a lot of monsters and wizards and creatures and demons and whatnot that I get to play that are raceless. And I hope that continues.
Yeah. Well, kind of carrying on from that, and I was wondering, because, you know, you're the professional and you've got a much better ear for this stuff. Do you think it makes a difference when a non-black voice actor actually voices a black character? And what I always think of is Vivienne from the new Dragon Age game.
Yeah.
Where the woman who voices her is very lovely. She's a woman of color, but she's not black. And so there's part of me that goes, you couldn't find any black woman at all. Like, the woman who voiced Ashley in Mass Effect is black, but she voiced a non-black character, so.
Well, you know, I gotta be honest. I've voiced quite a few characters that are either not black or racially ambiguous. And that's fine. But if the character you know, that blackness is, you know, an important part of who he is. I really think it should go to a black actor, just like if he's Asian or Hispanic or what. It should go to, be once again, because we want everybody working. You know, there are enough roles to go around that we don't have to have, you know, all white folks playing all the ethnic parts. Did I answer that?
Okay. Yeah. That's one that's like, it's kind of a, it's not a straight yes or no question. So it's not like, you'd be like, yes, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. And there's some very fine black voice actors out there, and some that are fine actors that just haven't been being booked yet for whatever reason. So I think it's going to happen. I think despite the Trumpification of the world, because gamers tend to be a younger audience, I think more gamers understand that racial diversity is a good thing in society as well as in the video games they're playing. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, writing parts for black people. Sean Vanneman, who was the main writer for The Walking Dead game, Season 1, he based his character on a black professor that he had when he was in school. Now, Sean is a white guy, happens to be married to a black woman. So there's a racial sensitivity that he has that maybe some other writers don't. But fortunately, I do see a fair amount of black characters and Asian characters and Latino characters. I think a lot of the writers now for video games who may have been writing for movies or television in years past are writing multi-ethnic parts. So that's a good thing.
Definitely.
You actually made me think about there is a mod for Fallout New Vegas in which someone retextures all the characters, and sometimes they will change the race of a character to reflect the voice actor, because apparently for most of the minor characters it's just shuffled around. They didn't, like, there was no correlation.
Yeah, I'm playing some minor characters in that. I don't remember which ones, but...
But most people will probably recognize you as Lee Everett from the Walking Dead Telltale game.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find that folks want to, like, typecast you as a black dude in VA roles?
Typecast as a black... Well, you know, I am a black dude, so I'm not sure typecasting... I don't think you can type me as a black dude because I am a black dude. I mean, it's just... Oh, we have a part for a black character with an age range of such and such. If Dave Fennoy fits in that, I'm not going to be playing the 20-something-year-old guy, but, you know, that 40-plus guy, yeah, I got that. But once again, because of the nature of my growing up, where I did, and education and schooling, and the people I was around, which were everybody... I can dial in a little bit more of what we think of as black, and then I can get away from that and become something else. It's funny because when I first started in voiceover for a few years, I would get white directors on various things. It'd be commercials or whatever, and they'd say, "Is there any way you could make that blacker?" My comment to them was always, "Well, I'm not sure I understand what you mean. I mean, do you want a hip hop kind of thing? Do you want him to be a, you know, older Southern black man? You know, because we are not a monolithic group. We are vast. We are diverse. There's lots of different accents and waves of speaking for black people around the country, indeed the world." I would say, would you ever ask a white actor to make it whiter? No, you would give him more information. I'm looking for a college professor from Minnesota or New Hampshire, or he's a Southern guy from Alabama, but educated, or he's a hick from Texas. You would have some other description other than blacker. And I wasn't doing that to, you know, piss them off or berate them. I looked at it as educating them, helping them get better at their task. We're very racially sensitive in this country, unfortunately, still. And sometimes, you know, it's just a description. You know, one of the stupidest things I ever hear is somebody, oh, well, I don't see race. Yes, you do. Don't be stupid. But it's fine for us to describe, oh, yeah, I want you to do a black guy. This is a guy, he's from the South. He doesn't have a whole lot of education, data, whatever that is. Or, you know, he's a black professor from Harvard. You know, still black guys. Still yep. black guys. So
mm-hmm. It seems like what you're saying is when someone says blacker in that way, they're using it as like a synonym for something. And it's unclear what
the word is urban
are associated.
Yeah, well, that's the euphemism. Oh, yeah, right. We need this to be very urban. And, you know, I, once again, it's a sensitivity. It's not necessarily being as down with the variety in black culture as they might want to be, or, you know, their experience might not be that much. Once again, though, the world is changing. This is, you know, 20 years later from when people were saying that to me. And I think directors now are much better at being able to communicate, you know, oh, yeah, well, this is a black character. He's from here. He's this level of education. He's this intelligent. So you get a much better picture rather than just, oh, yeah, make it blacker.
Yeah, there was actually an article about that today in the Huffington Post. The guy that was on 30 Rock, and I'm blanking out on his name, but he had a post talking about when he, no, I'll find it and get a link in the notes, and I'll get you a link. But he was talking about that same thing where he would go audition, and he would be told to make it blacker, make it more urban. And then he would also hear, but you speak so well. You're so well-educated and articulate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, the other little pin. You know, that Barack Obama, he speaks so well. He's an educated man. What do you expect him to speak like? Right. But, you know, and these are the little telling things, the little nicks and pins of racism that we're still suffering with as Americans, mm-hmm. That we just don't know each other. We have an idea of who we might be, but, you know, sometimes we've been told to be afraid of this or afraid of that. So people end up saying things like, you know, gosh, I don't see color. I don't see race. And wow, that Colin Powell, he speaks so well, as if it should be a surprise. You never hear that with a white politician. Oh, that Donald Trump, he speaks so well. No, he doesn't.
That would be a lie.
Well, that would be a lie. That would be a big lie.
Oh, God. Okay, so before we get too derailed, because we could talk about this, like, this topic.
Oh, yeah, don't get me started on politics and culture and whatnot. I'll go off the rails.
But I want to talk about Masquerada, Songs and Shadows, because, first of all, I played the game. It's amazing. But secondly, I can't find any voice actor credits for this game.
Mm.
Like, I know you're in it because you told me you were in it.
Yeah. I'm forgetting that they're all Italian names. I'm forgetting the name of the character I play, but it is an amazing game. It is an amazing world. But the character I play is a head of one of the guilds, and mm-hmm. And they're involved in a revolution. And the whole idea of when you die, your mask, your song goes into this tree and the magical mm-hmm. mass and whatnot. It really is an incredibly imaginative game. And this was one of the first games where we did some of the recording ensemble. So you got a room full of actors and microphones and scripts, and you're, you know, bouncing energy off of each other, and that was just fantastic. And it's an indie game. I'm not sure I would call it small, because it really, they do create really a big world, and it looks wonderful. Mm-hmm. That came out of Singapore. And the game developers came over, and we recorded over here. And once again, it's another thing I like about the video game industry. It is so international. A couple of years ago, I got to go to Malmo, Sweden, to speak in front of Nordic Fest, which is a game developers convention to talk about the making of the Walking Dead game, and it was myself and one of the writers, a couple other actors, and the recordist, who Jordy is no longer with us. But I saw one in the previous question, how did I get that part? The way I get all the other parts is I auditioned. You know, my agent sent me an audition. Sometimes, there are some times that people just offer me parts, but most of the parts I get, I have to audition for, just like everybody else.
Okay, I was just curious because it, you know, it seems to be a game that people are learning about more and more, but it's not, you know, for all the bigger voice talent in it, it's not getting a lot of, like, really widespread press.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I've read some gamer press on it, and it's been very good. But this, I think, will be a game that has legs because it'll be a word of mouth kind of game. People will play it, and then they'll tell their friends, and their friends will play it, and they'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and
yeah, because I met the developers at PAX West actually, and then they were like, "Here, have many keys so people can go play this game." Because you know, there's a message in it about LGBT rights, because that is still illegal and still an issue in Singapore.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, in the world, the UN just came out today and said, hey, listen, we need to decriminalize gayness around the world. And it's true. It's true. You know, with people are people, and, you know, some of us swing one way, some of us swing the other. There are those who swing both ways. You know, somebody else's sexuality has nothing to do with yours. We have to evolve. We just have to evolve. And any religion that's telling you that, you know, this person is wrong or evil or to be shunned because they happen to be gay, it's not a lifestyle. Nobody chooses that. That's who they are. And how do we get? We got back to politics, damn it.
Just a little bit, but it was game related, and you were in the game, so it worked.
True, and there's a game that came out of Norway. Oh God, now I can't remember the name. I play a gay character, and he's a warrior, and actually he falls in love with a character that he originally wanted to kill.
Oh, neat.
So,
when you remember the name, you'll have to tell us, because now I want to go play it.
Let me see if I can look it up right quick.
Because now inquiring minds need to know.
Now inquiring minds need.
And my keyboard.
It's called Dreamfall.
Oh, I got Dreamfall.
Oh yeah, Dreamfall is wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna add that to my long list of things to stream once I'm done with Mafia. But speaking of Mafia, David has the next question regarding that game.
Yeah.
So you're also in Mafia 3.
Yes, I am.
Did the buzz around that game and knowing it had a black protagonist change how you approached the role?
Well, you know, I didn't know it until I booked it.
Oh.
I didn't even know what the game was until I booked it. As a matter of fact, I don't think they told us what it was in the first session or two, which happens a lot. A lot of games, as a matter of fact, most games, you have to sign an NDA before you can even audition, and one of the things they do to protect the game often is you sign the NDA and it has a working title that is not the game. And because most of the time you're working by yourself, you may not, you know, ever have an inkling of what it was. I knew it was a big game because I had several auditions for this, and it took a long time. They were very, very careful in the casting. It's cast very well. I think this is the best Mafia game ever because the theme of the game, what the game is about, is racism. The protagonist was an orphan, a Vietnam vet who had in his youth had been somewhat aligned with a black mob, and in New Orleans where he's from, the sheriff is racist and the KKK, and they have been taking advantage of the black folks in that part of, in their part of town, and fighting with the black mob and cheating them, you know, so it's mob against mob. And it has a lot to do. There are a lot of parallels with today and police brutality and racism. And, you know, I'll never be the one to say that we haven't had some progression. We wouldn't have a black president. We wouldn't have so many black folks on television, so forth and so on. But clearly we're not over it as a society. But the parallels with today and this game that's supposedly taking place in the 60s are just remarkable. And the character I get to play is an underground DJ. And I get to rant about all the things that are going wrong and racism and the racists within the game. And so it was a great part to play. I'm glad, I'm proud to be a part of it. Now, it's, you know, there's some tough stuff in this game. This is not for your little children. But I think it's an important game in our industry.
It's amazing. I was like clocking the UPS truck on release day. like UPS.
When are they delivering? When are they delivering?
Right. But you know, I talked to Charles Webb, and you know, I've been devouring everything about the game that's written by folks of color.
Yeah.
Because I did try to read one really, really bad review in progress by a UK white dude, and I'm just like, no, this has sealed the deal. I can't deal with like the, oh my god, too much racism, it's inconvenient views I've been getting from a lot of white folks.
Well, you know, once again, societally, racism hasn't gone away. And, you know, the thing you hear from a lot of white people, and I'd say this in the full, you have to fully understand, I have many, 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 it's not just, oh, some of my best friends are white. I've got many, many, many best friends of every genre, of every ethnic persuasion. There are a lot of white people who, they feel a tinge of guilt. They feel bad when you talk about racism. They feel that you are pointing at them. Most of the time you're not, you know, when I'm talking about racism, I'm generally not talking about a particular person. I'm talking about the institutional racism. The thing that makes a cop so afraid of a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun that within 2 seconds of pulling up on him, he's shot dead and then walks. I'm talking about that kind of institutional racism. A lot of people don't want to talk about or acknowledge. And it's there. It's happening. Just to believe us when we tell you what's happening to us in our lives. People are sometimes just uncomfortable and feel like you are blaming them. I am only blaming you if you are not trying to be part of the solution, if you are denying my reality. You know, the police don't treat white people the way they treat black people. That's not to say that we can't have wonderful lives and all of those things. I live a great life, but it's a little different. I'm treated a little different. I'm old enough now, I have enough gray hair that I'm not viewed as much of a threat. But I live in a great neighborhood. I have some young men that came to visit a nephew and some of his school buddies. They would come every year while they were in college for spring break. And one of them is Steve Harvey's son. One of them is a son of a doctor who works very closely with the president on Obamacare. All kids of very accomplished families. And so one day they were here and they went out and they were taking pictures of some really nice houses and whatnot around here. And as they got in their car to go into Hollywood, six cops descended on them. One of my neighbors called and said, there's gang members stalking the neighborhood. Well, there's nothing about these young men that looks like gang members. But they're black. Fortunately, I was home. The police came to the house, and they didn't even come to the front door. They were walking around in the yard. Thank God my pit bulls weren't out. They were walking around the yard looking in the windows to see if somebody was there, which, you know, no, just come to the front. That was odd. They, right. You know, I happened to see them walking by, and I went to the front door and said, "Officer, is there something I can do for you?" And they said, "Do you know so-and-so?" And I said, "Yes, my nephew." Oh, okay. And they were surprised. Well, one, they were surprised I answered the door. but white kids doing the same thing, walking down the street, up and down the street, taking some pictures of some houses, this wouldn't have happened to. It would mm-hmm. not have happened to. It's a different reality that we have to deal with. And white people will tell you, "Oh, man, I'm tired of race." Well, imagine how we feel.
Right.
Imagine how we feel. That said, I hold no rancor towards anybody. That was one of the wonderful things about my parents. They taught me about racism, and I'm sure, as most black people will have heard, and some of y'all white folks are getting introduction into black middle-class life that you might not have had. My mother told me often, "Son, you're going to have to work twice as hard to get half as much, but don't ever let that be an excuse for failure." And it was something I thought I only heard until, you know, I got older and black friends told me, "Yeah, I heard the same thing." Mm-hmm. White families don't have to have the conversation with their sons about how to interact with the police or what to do, or make sure your hands are on the steering wheel and you don't make any quick movements. It just doesn't happen. We live in two different worlds as far as law enforcement. You've looked at the number of white kids who have raped girls on college campuses who get these very short sentences, you know, 6 months, 3 months, maybe a year, or nothing at all. And you'll have a black kid does the same thing. He's raped some girl, and now he's got 10, 15, 20 years in prison. And I'm not saying he shouldn't get that, but the white kid should get it too. Mm-hmm. We need to, you know, be equal in our treatment of one another.
Definitely. And, you know, and that's why I'm real glad Mafia 3 is here. And also that the statement on race is there.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I see happening in the game world, I applaud the writers and developers of Mafia 3, because I think beyond just being a great game with lots of blasting away action, there's a great story in there. There's mm-hmm. Something to really think about. And I watch the video game industry moving deeper and deeper into important areas of thought and sociology, and looking at our human condition, which is what we don't want to just be entertained. We definitely want to be entertained, but we also want to see a reflection of life, and we want to touch on the issues that affect life, and more video games are taking us there as well, and so I'm proud of our industry for that.
Definitely. All right, so we've got a couple more craft type questions to round out this part before we get into questions sent by our listeners, because once you tweeted that, people just came out of the woodwork. So.
All right, what you got?
We got a couple more from us, and then listener questions. So, David, what you got?
I thought it was your question.
Oh, it is my question. See, we got so deep into that conversation, I just messed it all up.
I will ramble.
No, it's fine. I enjoy your rambling. And, you know, I'm sure I'm among these people that has misconceptions, but what are common misconceptions that people have about voice acting?
That it's easy.
Okay.
You're just talking. Or, you know, sometimes I'll be teaching or something or giving a presentation, and I'll get the question. So, you know, is it like real acting? And, you know, if you want to smack them, it is real acting. How it shows up is all the things you have to do in any form of acting, you have to do as a voice actor. Who are you? Who are you talking to? What's your background? What do you want? What are you trying to hide from? All of those things that that are part of any character development. What's your history? What drove you to the place you are? What's the pre-life? All of those questions have to be answered before you start coming up with the funny voices that we're known for.
True. Very true. Because, I mean, I tried for one game for Read Only Memories, and I was like, this is so not easy.
So our next question is, what's the most challenging thing about teaching others the craft of voice work?
Probably finding a language, a way of imparting the ideas that people will understand. The biggest, I think, difficulty in voice acting in particular is the transaction of reading words off of a page and having them come out as if you're just saying them. They're somebody else's words. You have to make them your own, and you have to bring them to life in a real way while reading them. Most people, you'll see it in a movie. Somebody will, I'm reading a note. It says here that so-and-so and so, which is, and you get an example of that when people, they think they're acting, and why are you doing this to me? I am, they're a little stiff. They don't understand that they're not connecting. They don't know what they're thinking. They don't know what they're feeling. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know who they're talking to and what that relationship is. So you have to bring that. So your reading skills need to be up. And hopefully familiarity with the copy, which you don't get in video games because you're seeing the script for the first time.
But it works out.
You have to get in character and stay in character and let the character speak. Don't try to make the word sound a certain way. Let the character say the words.
Okay. Well, other than, the silly question of, is this real acting? What is a question you're really sick of being asked about voice work?
It's not so much a question I'm asked. It's, hey, people tell me I have a really good voice. I'd like to get into voice acting. What do I need to do? I'd like to do this part time. Could you help me put a demo tape together? And it's like, well, you need all the stuff that comes before that. You need to study. You need to learn how to do it, first of all. And a lot of people aren't willing to put in the time and work. I ran into a woman I had done a workshop at SAG-AFTRA with a few months ago. And I ran into her coming out of a session. She was going into the session. And, well, don't I know you? And she said, oh, yeah, you taught us at SAG-AFTRA. And it was just wonderful. And because of the things you said, I'm working now. And I had a further conversation with her. And she told me, she's going to every free class she can, every three free webinar she can, paying for classes when she can. She's putting in the effort and it's paying off. A lot of people don't want to put in the effort. I've got a wonderful voice. Shouldn't that get me by? Well, if you're a bad actor, that wonderful voice is going to show up the bad acting sooner than somebody with a not so wonderful voice.
Definitely.
Yep. It certainly seems like something you have to be like genuinely invested in to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there anything new or coming up that you can or want to talk about?
Oh boy. I've got some games coming up that I can't mention because of the indie. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you and you guys are out of town. So I'd have to spend all the money on planes or hire somebody. So yeah.
Well, you were in Mafia.
Yeah. Well, Mafia 3, something I didn't have to sign an NDA for this. I got to play Lucius Fox in Batman Arkham Knights, and now Telltale Games, one of my favorite employers, is doing a Batman game, and I get to play Lucius Fox in that game with a completely different take on Lucius Fox than I did on Batman Arkham Knight. So I'm loving that. And I'm teaching more now. And for those who are voice actors or aspiring voice actors, I started to say perspiring voice actors, which sometimes you do when you see the script. Oh, God. For aspiring voice actors and voice actors, visit my website, DaveFinoyTraining.com. DaveFinoyTraining.com. And if you sign up, I will send you, you will receive free 6 steps to auditions, that book. And I guarantee this will make you a better voice actor like that. This will up your game significantly in overnight. 6 steps to auditions, that book. Took me years to learn this, and it's free. Plus, you'll find out, you know, webinars that I'll be giving. I'm doing a webinar on voice acting for video games in January. That will be 4 weeks, the 9th through the 30th, Mondays, 2.5 hours each time. There will only be 8 people that I'll be working with, but we can have many, 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 many flies on the wall. You'll get to hear everything, all the direction. And one of the things I've learned over the years is you learn an awful lot viewing, listening to other people's successes and failures as they stumble along the way to greatness in voiceover. So I would like to let you know about that.
Cool. Well, we always have show notes, so we'll have a link to all of this awesome stuff.
Coolness.
When the episode goes up. Okay, so when you retweeted the questions, we suddenly got like all the questions, but they're short, thankfully. So the first question is from actually a good friend of mine, and I found the Walking Dead games through him because he streamed them all. And he wanted to know, Stephen Kilbride wanted to know, have you found it difficult to bring to life, that's a really oddly worded question, have you found it difficult to bring a character to life for some game roles, and if so, any in particular, and why?
Well, you know, if I found it difficult, they wouldn't have booked me. So, yeah, I've come across some auditions that, you know, I had to scratch my head a little bit and go, oh, I'm not so sure. And if for some reason you can't wrap your mind around who that character is, you're just not going to get the call. So, yeah, but nothing that I've ever actually gotten to work on. There have been some auditions where, you know, I'm not sure I'm right for this. But if I've worked on it, I understood the character.
Okay. David, do you want to take the next question?
Von J. Asks, what's, says his, but I'm going to change the pronouns. What's your favorite character you've acted as?
Well, you know, that's like trying to decide between your children, which one is your favorite. But I'm going to say Lee Everett, because Lee Everett has given me so many gifts. When I auditioned, I knew the audition was different. When I booked it and did the first session within 20 minutes, I knew this was a special project, that, I love the fact that they really just, you don't have to overdo it. Just be this character. I related to the character. If I weren't doing what I'm doing now, I'd probably be a college professor someplace, a history professor, sociology or something. And the character was a college professor who had discovered his wife cheating and killed her and her lover and was on his way to prison and you know, meets Clementine and takes care of her as a way of redemption. Well, I have a daughter. She's, you know, older now. I don't have to take care of her, but I could relate to that. And because the game won 100 Game of the Year awards, a little more, I was nominated 6 times as best performance in a video game, won a couple, even got to go to London for the BAFTAs. I was nominated for a British Academy of Film and Arts Award, British Academy of Film and Television Arts Award. Got to go to the ceremony in London. Suddenly, I went from being an actor that the industry knew to an actor that the fans knew. It's like that character actor. You see them all the time. You don't know their name. You like their performances. And then they're nominated for an Oscar. And now it's Oscar nominated so-and-so. Mm-hmm. So it put me on the map in a way I hadn't been before. And I got what I call the look back. The industry started looking back at what I'd done, because by that point I'd already done 70 or 80 games. And the industry looked back, oh, he's Rodin. Oh, he's Gabriel Tosh. Oh, he's Voljin. Oh, he's this, he's that. He's been in all these games. Oh, well. So it kind of upped my ante in the business. Made me a lot better known.
Awesome. So one of Vaughn's other question was, if you could be another character, who would you most want to act as again?
I would love to be able to play Lee Everett again, but they killed him. Damn. Sometimes I'm asked, what iconic character would you like to play? And I've had the very good fortune of being in most of the very iconic properties. I'm in the Walking Dead world. I'm in the Transformer world. I'm in the Worlds of Warcraft world, Worlds of StarCraft world. I'm in the Star Wars world, the Star Trek world. I'm in the Marvel world, playing characters that are well known. And I certainly wouldn't turn any of that down. Love doing it. But what I'd really like to do is have more characters like Lee Everett, characters that I can make iconic in a great project. That is the most rewarding.
Cool. I remember at GamerX when you were doing your Q&A, someone asked a similar question, and you talked about maybe a Civilization game, but set somewhere else because you like history.
Well, one of the things video games are great at are taking you to other worlds, and that's wonderful. But I would like to see world history looked at. So games that take all kinds of people, say, to China and ancient Chinese history and Africa and African history. You know, up until recently, if you went to the library to get a book on African history, it would start in the 1800s with the arrival of the white man doing his exploration. And the history of Africa, it's so deep. There were empires there that, you know, most Europeans and Americans have no idea of.
Mm-hmm.
Heroes, kings, queens, warriors, legends, philosophers that no one knows about. And it would be wonderful to have some games that explored that. And we have the same thing in South and Central America. There are just many cultures that need to be explored. Tell some, you know, create these heroes, these legends, that are already there in these cultures. We just don't know about them.
So, Von Jay's third question is, who are your favorite actors to work with?
Oh, wow. And I hate that question because I'm going to miss somebody. Masquerada, I loved working with Matt Mercer, who plays the lead character, but I also got to work with Fred Tatasciore on that, who's I'm a big fan of. Love Troy Baker. Sissy Jones is one of my favorite actors. Tara Strong. Yuri Lowenthal. There are just so many really fine voice actors, and I have missed many, and somebody's going to play this and play it back. J.B. Blanc. There's just so many wonderful voice actors that I've had the opportunity to work with, that too many to mention. And right now, you know, it's like, you go out to dinner, you want to go out and you've seen all these restaurants. And as soon as you say, hey, yeah, well, where are we going to go to dinner? That's where I hit right now. But
it's choice overload.
Yes. Choice overload. Exactly.
All right. Well, the next question should not be that hard. Rachel Churchy on Twitter asked, what's the best character you voiced? And if you could choose who you would have, and if you could choose, would you have voiced a different Walking Dead person?
You know, I couldn't think of a better character than Lee Everett in the Walking Dead series. I can't think of a better character than Lee Everett to have voiced. Now, there are some other characters that I'm absolutely have fallen in love with. I really loved playing Voljin, leader of the Horde, in World of Warcraft, and I got to play him for damn near a decade. and Gabriel Tosh, World of StarCraft. I'm loving playing the Lucius Foxes. But, you know, Lee Everett, I'm not sure I'll ever be able to top that. I remember when I was in London at the BAFTAs, and I had a thought, and I stepped back and I thought, you know what? This is really wonderful, but this is something that may never happen again. I may never be in another video game of this caliber. I may never get another role that touches people so deeply. So breathe this in and enjoy it. Now, fortunately, I am getting to play some great characters in a lot of games, but I'm not sure I've hit that Lee Everett level yet.
Okay.
Hope to do it again.
Yep. I think that's, you know, and not in a bad way, but Lee is going to follow you the rest of your career.
Yeah, no, and I completely understand, you know, the songwriter, the band that, you know, has to play that same song over and over and over again. And they're doing it for 30, 40 years. and the actor that's known for this one role that he played forever, despite the fact he's been in zillions of others. If you've got something that iconic, you're blessed. So I'm blessed.
We also got a question from Tim. He's a friend of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And his first question is, with such an extensive resume, is there any role you wish you could play?
Everyone that I haven't booked. You know, a funny thing about us actors, and something you have to kind of fight against, is living in the parts you didn't book. You know, the parts you book and you kind of put them in your pocket a little bit and you kind of forget them. But the ones that you really wanted, that you just thought you were right for, that your audition was super and you thought, oh, I'll have a great time playing this, and you didn't get the call, somebody else got it. You can drive yourself nuts worrying about what you did wrong, so forth and so on. And then maybe you didn't do anything wrong. You know, it's not one person that decides who books what. It's a process that involves a committee, and one guy may have been their first choice, but everybody else's third, fourth, fifth choice, and somebody else was everybody's second choice. Gee, they may have gotten it. Or maybe somebody had more Twitter followers than you. There are any number of reasons, or maybe your voice just didn't match up the way they wanted it to with some of the other voices. There's all kinds of reasons besides your performance why you may or may not book a job. So you have to understand that and let it go. But as an actor, you know, your audition is like a job interview. So mm-hmm. We are having job interviews every day. And once we have done the job, we have to find another job. Unlike most people, you have a job interview, you get the job, and you're working for the next 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 20 years. So it can be difficult, especially if, you know, you're not working a lot and, you know, money's funny, and everybody in this business has ups and downs. I know I have. I have to remind myself, like everybody should, of their blessings and be happy that I have been able to play parts in the world's most iconic properties in video games.
True. And the next question, I feel like we've covered this in different ways, but just to be sure, Tim's other question was, has there ever been a role you wish you hadn't taken? And I feel like we've answered this one already.
You know, no. There was one. I played a pod racer early in my career, and it was a 5-hour session. The whole thing was shouted because they were pod racing, and the whole thing was in Huttese. And the day after, I couldn't talk for a week. That was my only regret. I still loved doing the work. I still loved that. But that was the regret, that my voice was so hacked up. I was booked to do a booth announce. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, you know, that kind of thing, for a sports award show. And I couldn't do it. I had to bow out because my voice was gone. And that producer has never, ever hired me again.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Happens.
Yeah.
That will, like, retroactively contextualize my experience because I'm pretty sure I played that game. Susu Rocket asks, I would love to hear what it was like working on King's Quest VI as the pawn shop owner. The voiceover game has changed so much since then, the gaming industry as well. That good day still takes me back to my childhood, and then some emojis.
Well, yeah. Well, one, let me say this, that I have been surprised over the years how many people have brought up playing that my role as the pawn shop owner, because it's very different than most of the stuff I do. Usually, I'm a heavier voice, a hero, a bad guy, a wizard, a monster or something, and with the pawn shop voice. Well, my friends and I, we like doing this and that and the other. And so it was very different than the kind of thing I usually get booked for. But it was a fairly early game, and a lot of people have played that game, and it brought a lot of people joy. And it's just wonderful that something I did touched so many people.
Cool. And the last question, and it's interesting because I did not realize you had a voice in Street Fighter.
Oh, yeah.
So
who the hell? I have war! Oh, you must die!
You scared the shit out of me. Uncle Bibby wants to know, how much voice acting did you do for Street Fighter V?
Oh, God. How can I quantitate how much that was? Several hours worth. How much of that, you know, in terms of the percentage of the game, I think it's probably very small. But, you know, it was two or three sessions over, you know, a few weeks.
Okay. Because they said they really liked your part in the story mode.
Ah, excellent.
Yes. Although I wish the story mode would have been there at launch, but that's a whole other rant.
That's a whole other thing, yeah. Yeah.
So we usually wrap up the show, kind of talk about what we're playing or reading or watching. And since you're a very busy man and also not a gamer, really, I was wondering what you've been playing or watching, or I'm sorry, reading or watching lately.
Well, I've been watching Atlanta, the new TV show that I think is just brilliant. I'm waiting with bated breath for Game of Thrones to come back.
Okay.
I do watch not as often as I would like, but I do watch The Walking Dead. Funny thing, they're having some kind of premiere event, and they needed a booth announcer, and somebody thought it would be a great idea since I played Lee Everett. And I do booth announcing to be the booth announcer for this. And the producer ran it past the developers of the thing. And they said, well, you know, that's the Walking Dead game. We're AMC, the television show. It's a conflict of interest, which lets me know why. One of the reasons I did not become become Ezekiel on the show. There was a huge Twitter campaign that went on for a couple of years to get me to play Ezekiel. And they gave me an audition because I think they had to, but I don't think they ever had any thought of actually hiring me. And I realized when the Walking Dead game came out, the Telltale game, it blew the doors off of the AMC Walking Dead game that nobody played. So I think there was a little jealousy in that.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Cool. David, what have you been playing?
I am still playing, this game I found in the, Google Play Store, TMNT Legends. Apparently they updated it today. So now there are versions of the Ninja Turtles in like LARPing costumes, like Donatello is dressed as a wizard and.
Okay.
Now, either one of you playing Kim Kardashian's game?
No.
Good.
And I've been messing with some of the mods for Shadowrun Returns Dragonfall.
Mm.
The second of those three Shadowrun games. And I've been sort of just playing this one that just has this sandbox sort of thing. And they've done some very clever things with the engine, like they can make they've made like a taxi you can call that will drive up to a predetermined spot, which is I don't think something the game was designed for.
Hey, if someone can build it, it will be a mod.
And I'm telling you, the games are just getting better. The music, the acting, the backgrounds, the virtual reality. This industry, wow. Expect some really, really cool things to be coming out over the next few years.
Definitely.
You know, I was watching Westworld on HBO's Westworld, and it gave me an idea that in some ways, I think this is where the video game industry is going to go, especially when we talk about virtual reality and the idea of putting you in that other world and having that kind of experience. Now, I don't know if you'll be able to, you know, get shot and whatnot, thankfully, hopefully not, or have the sexual experiences that they're having on the show. But I really believe that's where the world of video games will go in the next few years.
I'll pass on the getting shot. The rest of it may work out.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well, as for me, I've been playing a lot of stuff that you're in, Dave.
Ah!
Mafia 3 and Masquerada. So I actually finished Masquerada.
Yeah.
I haven't met you yet in Mafia 3, but that's the plan because I've been streaming this game every day since I got it.
Have you played Minecraft Story Mode?
I tried it. I was not digging it. Minecraft is not my jam, I'm finding.
Okay. Well, I'm in that too.
I know. One of my friends is streaming it, and when I said that you were going to be on the podcast, he about jumped out of his skin. So he was very excited.
Well, listen, I just want to thank you for, you know, reaching out and interviewing me. I had a great time, and I thought the discussion was good. You got me to talk about some things we don't ordinarily get to talk about in video game interviews, but happy to do it. And always great to have a chance to let the fans get to know who I really am. And connect with them a little bit. And please visit Dave Fannoy, voice actor, on Facebook. Friend me on Facebook. If you're interested in learning how to do voice acting, visit my page, DaveFannoyTraining.com. Follow me at Dave Fannoy. And I look forward to, you know, voicing some stuff for you sometime.
Cool. But real quickly, I'm Tanya, Cypher Tier everywhere. If you find that, that's me. David, where can folks find you?
I am at Red Conversation most places. I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/redconversation, and that's it.
And that is a wrap for episode 71. Thank you so much for being with us, Dave. This was awesome.
It is my pleasure. Mwah.
Yay.
So were you born with this much charisma, or did you like make a deal with a witch or something?
You're talking about me?
Yeah.
You're very
charismatic.
I think charisma, I think you're born with a certain amount of it and a certain amount you develop.